Welcome to Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. On this podcast, we journey through the devastating experience of the death of a child. Grief is seldom discussed openly in our culture, and the death of a child makes people feel even more uncomfortable. We approach the topic openly and honestly, speaking to people who have lost loved ones and experts who help care for them. Whether you are a parent experiencing loss or someone who wants to support another going through this tragedy, this podcast strives to offer hope and help.
Welcome to episode 238 of Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. I'm Marcy Larson, Andy's mom. Today, I have the pleasure to introduce you to Sandy, Blake's mom. Now, Sandy comes to me on the recommendation of Danny's mom and stepdad. They were featured on episode 150, so you may want to go back and listen to that to hear a little bit more about them. Donna and Jeff are the couple that started the TV show in Ohio that I have been on a couple of times as well. So that's just to give you a little background information. But I absolutely know that you are going to love listening to Sandy. Her grief journey has really had a lot of ups and downs, and I learned a ton from her today, and it's really amazing how far she has come in a relatively short time, because Blake died less than 2 years ago now. So if you are looking to be inspired a little bit, this is the episode for you. So sit back and listen to Sandy, Blake's mom. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the Always Andy's Mom podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I know. It's been, we've been communicating for a long time.
Yes.
And
shortly after Blake's death.
Yeah, really. Actually, quite early. And I just talked a little bit in the introduction about who introduced us, and that was the lovely Donna, your friend.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was very, very early on in the grief journey that we started talking.
Yes.
And then suddenly I get a message from you just a little while ago saying, I really feel like now's the time. I want to share Blake's story right now.
Yes. Yes. A lot of things changed.
A lot of things changed.
Yeah.
And I'm just so happy to share that story today. And my listeners, I know, are going to be kind of blown away by that part of it. The part that kind of changed everything really in your life and your grief journey.
Yes.
So, but I don't want to jump to that right now because that's getting way ahead of ourselves. Because what I want to do now is I want to give you a chance to talk about your Blake.
Yes. Well, Blake was an exceptional child. I think everybody says that.
Uh-huh. Of course we do.
Yes. He never gave me a lick of trouble. I mean, he was sassy, yes. But other than that, I mean, he was such a good kid. And I always got compliments on him, on how polite he was and how caring he was, what a good heart he had, what a good friend he was. You know, it's kind of funny because in all of his years of school, I never heard him talk bad about one person. Not one person.
Wow.
Yes.
That's awesome.
You know, I think about it now and I'm like, you know, was that normal?
Yeah, was that not really?
And he just never did. He just liked everybody. He was kind to everybody. Mm-hmm. And he made me proud. He made me really proud.
That's
wonderful. He loved sports. He was in soccer. He played softball. And then in his later years, he decided he didn't want to anymore. And I let him choose that. So then he just got into the computers, into the gaming, and all that, and I never saw him again. He was always secluded in his But he enjoyed it. Enjoyed it, and I was so glad that he did. And I just let him be. I let him be Blake.
Yeah. Right.
I did.
Right. Just let him kind of find his own personality, find his own loves. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I could hear him screaming in his room and yelling and laughing. And it brought joy to my heart. It really did. Mm-hmm. It really did. So, you know, that was Blake. He just was an exceptional child. And I was so glad that God chose me as his mom for 23 years.
Yeah. So tell me about your family. Where did Blake fit in your family?
Blake, I had two boys. I do have two boys. His older brother is 30, just turned 30. And Blake was like 14 years younger than his older brother.
14 years younger?
Yeah, 14 years younger. So basically, I raised them by themselves, like only children.
Okay.
And it was nice because I got to spend different times with them alone. And they didn't have to share me.
Yeah.
You know, basically, my older one was already grown up and out of the house. So, you know, I had Blake and I thought he was a flu and it turned out he wasn't. And 9 months later, voila.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. It was a surprise.
Oh, I bet. I bet that was a surprise to have one. And then 14 years later, oh my word, here's another one.
Yes. Yes. But Blake was my miracle child. I lost my dad and Blake was very close to his grandpa. And Blake was just like, he was a godsend to me. Because when I lost my dad, he gave me a reason to get up every morning and do what I needed to do. And I was grateful for that.
Yeah.
And I know now why he came about.
Yeah, he was a huge support for you.
He was a very big support.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And losing his grandpa was hard. And we went through it together. We went through it together.
How old was Blake when your dad died?
Blake was 4. But he was so unbelievably like aware of what had happened. And I had talked to friends of ours who owns of the funeral home. And I said, do I bring him? What do I do? Because he's only 4 years old. And he's like, Sandy, you know, he needs to know that grandpa's not where in the house anymore.
Right.
And he probably needs that visual. So I did take him. And he had a hard time after the fact.
I'm sure he did.
Like knowing when we went to the house that he wasn't running down to see his grandpa anymore. And he was in heaven. We worked on it together.
Yeah.
You know, he helped me. I helped him. And that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Was Blake's dad in the picture very much?
No.
Not.
He wasn't around.
Right. So it was the two of you, really.
It was the two of us. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. I'm glad that it was just the two of us.
Because I think, you know, you saying 14 years separating those two. So, you know, your older one was 18, likely out of the house even.
Yes. Yes.
When you were going through that grief with your dad. So it truly was just you and this little 4-year-old guy.
Just me and Blake. Yep.
Yeah.
And he was great. When he had his moments, I was there. And when I had my moments, he was there. A funny thing, my dad was cremated and I have an urn with his ashes in it. And I did not know that Blake knew what that was. Somebody had to hold him because he didn't know. But one day he goes, Mom, are Grandpa's eyelashes in there? And I said, in where? And he said, in here. And he pointed to the urn. And I said, you know, Blake, I honestly don't know. And it really bothered him. And I didn't know how to address that issue.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to traumatize him. You know?
Yeah, right.
And I was like, what made him think of that?
Right. You almost have to ask a lot of follow-up questions. Because like, well, yes. Yeah. But then is that going to be like, okay, now he's thinking there are like eyeballs in there. You know what I mean? Then it extrapolates to more and more and more. And maybe he was disturbed by it. But on the other hand, maybe he just did want to know that all of Grandpa was there.
I think so.
It's a balance, right?
It became a joke with us because I'd be like, do you remember when you asked me if Grandpa's eyelashes were in here? And he goes, yeah, I do. And so we would just kind of giggle about it because, you know, as he got older, he realized, what cremation was and everything like that. But I thought that was really cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really cute.
Eyelashes. Really so, cute. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so you know, he was your second, obviously, but yeah, you sort of, he grew up with just the two of you, really.
Yes.
Was he close to his older brother?
Was he what?
Close to his older brother at all?
They weren't really close. My brother, my other son lived in Columbus, in New Albany.
Okay.
So he didn't get to see him, but on family get-togethers yeah. and so forth. Blake just basically, I mean, they would talk, yeah, but they sure. weren't real close because of the age difference.
Age difference. Yeah, I know. So
it
much
was
of
a huge
age
difference, you know, and he thought he was, you know, Jason thought he was an annoying little brother yeah. and that kind of thing. But Jason did teach him like soccer ball and soccer moves.
Oh, cool.
And so they did have that bonding part to them, yeah. you know, to themselves. So I was glad for that. But, you know, like I said, it was just Blake and I was okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Sounds yeah. like it. Sounds like you're yeah. a pretty good team.
Yes, mm-hmm. we were. And then when Blake was 8, I met, you know, somebody else and we got married and we were a blended family. And sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. Okay. And he adopted Blake.
Okay.
And so Jason was with me when, with all this stuff with Blake, but we are no longer together, which is okay with me. I'm fine with it. And so it's just me and it's kind of hard, you know,
yeah.
just being me and my animals, because I yeah. don't have a lot of people to talk to about this. So I've had to go through this grief process pretty much by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know Donna worried about you.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was devastated. Yeah. It was horrible. There was so much trauma involved
yeah.
in Blake leaving this earth that it was the worst.
Yeah.
And the things I saw and the things that were done to him were horrible. And Donna really did guide me. Like, we went out to lunch all the time and like yeah. she'd check on me and everything that first year. But it was devastating to me.
I'm sure.
He was my baby, you know?
Well, why don't we talk about what happened to him? So
okay,
can we you talk about that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So in March, it was March 25th when I lost him. But 3 days prior to that, I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was throwing up and I thought, oh my gosh, what is this? Well, late night the 24th, Blake came into my room and he never does that. Jason was a truck driver, so he wasn't there. And he said, you know, Mom, I'm throwing up. Will you come in? And I thought, that's really strange because he always wanted to be by himself. And I said, sure.
So he was worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was scared. And he was like, this really hurts. And I'm like, you know what? It's probably acid reflux. We'll keep an eye on it. And if you're not better in the morning, we'll take you to the emergency room. So
because you had been throwing up too, you said?
Yeah, 3 days yeah. prior. So I just thought he had what I had, you know.
He had what you had. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of guilt there because, and I'll talk about that later. But anyways, he asked to sleep with me and he never does that.
Yeah.
And he kept saying,
because he was 23 years old. Is that what you said?
23 years old, wanting yeah. to sleep with Mom. And I was like, sure you can, you know, and I stayed up with him and it was just, I kept thinking, oh, it's just what I had. And maybe yeah. just from him throwing up, it just hurt. And at about 11 o'clock, I realized something was definitely wrong. So yeah. we headed to the emergency room and went. And the doctor pressed on his stomach and he like screamed. And I'm like, oh, it's appendicitis probably.
Right.
You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they took him to CAT scan, brought him back. And the doctor comes in and said there was a hernia in back of his liver. And we were going to transport him to OSU, which is in Columbus. It's a big hospital.
Right.
And, you know, just acted like it was nonchalant. Because if he would have told me what was really going on, I'd have been Googling it. And then mama bear mode would have kicked in very quickly. And I would have said, life fight him, do whatever you have to do. You need to get him out of here. Because what Blake had was a diaphragmatic, and I don't even know if I'm saying that right, hernia.
A diaphragmatic hernia. Yep.
Where there was a hole. Yeah. There was a hole somewhere and all of his like stomach and intestines, everything was going upward.
Yeah.
And I'm taking a little detour here. So your diaphragm is the little muscle that separates your abdominal cavity from your chest cavity, from where your lungs are. And I have a very funny story about this, because when I was getting my prenatal ultrasounds, I think I've said this before on the podcast, that I was getting my prenatal ultrasound, and they're going through the heart has four chambers, and they're going through all this stuff. This is my first child. And I asked the question to the ultrasonographer, is the diaphragm intact? And she answered, yes, what are you? Because clearly that's not a normal question that a normal mama would ask. But if you have a diaphragmatic hernia, it means there's a hole in that hernia and all of your intestines can come up into your chest cavity. And it can be just horrible for a newborn infant because your lungs can't develop in utero.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But for an adult, if you get that, now, again, the same thing is your intestines can come up through that hole, because your intestines just kind of, you know, swim around in your belly. They aren't really fastened down. So if it's got space to go, they'll go there. And so it went up into his chest and would have made it very difficult to breathe, and can actually pinch off part of the bowel that way. And that what's pinched off there can even die, become septic. You know, it's a dangerous situation. So I'm just taking a little bit of a detour.
Mm-hmm. It is very dangerous. Yes. No, that's fine. I'm glad that you can explain to people, because, you know, they could look it up, but having somebody explain that knows what they're talking about actually, you know, get through somebody faster than when you're reading it. Because all I saw was emergency life-threatening situation. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I didn't know this till after everything happened, but it took the ambulance forever to transport him. And I was just having a fit. He was turning gray. He was sweating. When the paramedic finally came in, I said, something is seriously wrong with my child. She looked in his eyes and she said, he is sicker. I will never forget this. He is sicker than they're telling you. We're going to hit lights and sirens. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And by then I'm in hysterics.
You
know? And I'm like, what is going on? So I called Jason, and Jason's like, you come get me. You let them get him to the hospital. He's in good hands. You let me drive you, because you can't. You're hysterical.
Right.
So I did. We're almost in Columbus and we get a phone call from Morrow County. They had to divert my child because he went into cardiac arrest. And I was livid. And of course, traffic was bad. And he's driving like a race car driver in and out of traffic. And we're dodging cars and we're going on the medium. I said, I've got to get there. And so we did. And the things that I saw, I wish I wouldn't have seen. But I had to be there for my child.
Right.
And they talked to Jason, and I was busy being with Blake, talking to him, just telling him that I loved him and everything was going to be okay, and just to hang in there. And then I just remember the paramedic saying, you know, Mom, we're going to take good care of him. And I said, okay. So we headed to Columbus. We got to the ICU unit, and I said, is Blake here? And they said, no. And I said, something is wrong. Something is seriously wrong. We should not have beat the ambulance. We should have not beat the ambulance. I'm getting a call. I didn't know the number. I didn't answer it. The guy who brought us up to the ICU unit came and said, Delaware is trying to get a hold of you. You need to call them. And all I remember is the doctor saying, we've got Blake here. He went into cardiac arrest again. We've worked on him for an hour and 15 minutes and we're calling it. And I just can remember just screaming, you know, just screaming. And I said, we've got to get to Delaware. So we're on our way to Delaware. And I'm like, Lord, please, you know, just please let them bring him back to me. 5 minutes into our route, they called me. They said, we've got a heartbeat. Hurry. So I know he was waiting for me. I know it. And we got there, I rushed in to see him. And from there, it was just like trauma. You know, I had to sit there and look at my child with things all over him. And it was just horrific. And I didn't know what to do. I tried to stay calm, but all I could do was want to say everything that I needed to say to him.
Right.
Because he didn't look good. Yeah. And they had talked to Jason at Morrow County and said, you know, he lost a lot of oxygen and everything. So I just laid with him and I held him and I begged and I pleaded with God to take me instead of him.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. That's not the way it works sometimes. So when he went into cardiac arrest, they asked me if I wanted them to try again. And I just shook my head. I couldn't even talk. And I just said no, because I didn't want to do that.
Well, this was the third time, right?
Yeah, it was. And I just like, I can't do this to him. I won't. He wouldn't want it. I don't want it for him. So then, you know, you go through the thing, you know, Blake was an organ donor. He saw my heart on my driver's license. He had questioned me and he decided he wanted to be an organ donor too. And it was so funny when we went to get his driver's license and they said, would you like to be an organ donor? He turned around, he looked, he said, yes, turned around, looked at me with this great big smile on his face because he's all about helping people.
Yeah.
And I said, good job, Blake. You made me proud. I said, but you don't have to do it because I did. He goes, I want to do it, Mom, because I want to help somebody else one day.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I can't believe you were actually there for that, too.
Yes, you know? I was there for that because Blake was a late bloomer. He would not get his driver's license. I was driving him to college. I was driving him to college and dropping him off. And I said, you don't want to get your driver's license? And he said, no. Finally, at 20, I think he got kind of tired or embarrassed with me driving him to college. He said, I want to get my license. Uh-huh. So he did, and he passed, and it was like, it was a neat thing. And so, yeah, I was glad I was there for that.
Yeah. Well, especially because then you knew how important it was to him because he actually said it to you.
Yeah.
Unlike some families, I think, don't know. Like, I'm an organ donor. I don't even think my kids know that. I doubt they do, because I don't think I really had that conversation. So it's and it's sort of nice to know that you had the true conversation about it.
Yes. I mean, he looked at my driver's license. He says, what's his heart for? Mm-hmm. And I explained to him what it was for, because the important thing is you just never know. You never know if your family member's going to need something, another, you know, an organ or tissue or anything like that. And you're no longer here. You don't need anything. Yeah. Why not help somebody? And Blake thought the same thing. And he said, "When I go, I want to help somebody else." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did. I told them he was an organ donor, you know.
And it's good timing as we record this, because this will be released in April, which is the beginning of Organ Donation Awareness Month.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's just very good timing, I think, for this to happen, too.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so, too. So, you know, we went through all those things and we were waiting for Lifeline of Ohio to come, because they're located in Columbus, Ohio. And Delaware is close to Columbus. But then my husband's like, you know, I think we should go and let them, you know, do all this. And, you know, you just don't need to see it all. So,
yeah,
I had seen enough, really.
Right. Because, you know, when Andy died, we were able to donate tissues, but we couldn't donate organs. He just lost too much blood.
Yes. And Blake went into cardiac arrest. And so he couldn't either, but he did do tissue. And I actually heard from somebody who benefited from Blake.
Oh, yeah, I never did.
She was in college. She was a very active girl, played basketball, ran track. I mean, you name it, she did it. And it was something to do with her knee. And something happened and she could not do those things anymore. And it devastated her.
Yeah.
And funny thing is, Blake had just started working out like a month or two before this happened, and he was becoming active. And this girl got that, and she was so thankful because she was able to do what she always did before. And she was so grateful to Blake, and that warmed my heart that.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
He was able to do that.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's talk about your grief journey now and what that was like, because we touched on it at the beginning, because it was rough.
It was so rough. I mean, Blake lived at home. So he was with me 24/7. And then all of a sudden, he's not here.
Yeah.
You know, my grief, even though I knew that Blake was in heaven, I know that I was going to see him again, I focused on him not being here. Yeah. And it made me sick. Like, it was the deepest grief I could ever have. I could not look at pictures without, like, just, I mean, bawling, literally bawling. And I was always, like, sitting there going, you know, God, I don't understand. I'm never going to ask you why, but I don't understand why my Blake. Why at 23, you know, why did this happen to him? And I just kind of did a spiral. I kept going backwards instead of forward. And I know that grief is many, many layers. There is many layers to grief. I could not get past that first layer. Like, I stood still in grief. Yeah. I posted about him for a full year on Facebook, and it was just how much I missed him and, you know, things of that nature. Well,
and you had a good amount of anger, too.
You know, I had anger, but it wasn't at God.
No.
It wasn't at God. It was.
No, I know that. But you did have some anger because it felt like things were not handled well.
No, at the hospital.
You know, at that first hospital, especially, right?
Yes. And it did. It angered me so bad. And I was like, what if I would have taken him like in the early morning? Yeah. What if they would have life flighted him? What if?
Yeah.
The what if gets you every time. And I don't know any parent who has lost a child that doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
You don't have those what ifs. What if I would have, like, we would have left a little bit earlier? What if we would have left later? You know, what if? And those what ifs get you every time. Every time.
That's what I recall from those early conversations I had with you is just that just really be coming up again and again and again. And then Donna and I even talking a little bit about, you know, her not knowing how to be with you when the what ifs were just so overwhelming.
Yes. And it was so overwhelming to me. And instead of like going through my layers of grief, I stayed in that one layer.
Yeah.
And looking back now at like my memories, I can't even believe that was me saying that stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, Sandy, you know, why?
Well, it's hard though. I mean, it's hard and it's easy to get stuck that because you just want there to be a different outcome. And you think
you do.
And you want yourself, you want to have had more control in the situation than you had.
Yes.
Right?
And I had no control.
Yeah. You had no control in the situation, but you're trying, you're going through all those what if scenarios to try to give yourself a little bit of control, thinking that we could have had a different outcome. And even though you still can't, it's just a messed up situation. But
yes, very messed up. And I dwelled on it. I was like, I should have did this and I should have did that. And he probably would be here. And, you know, I grew up in faith and I just knew that this was going to be the outcome. Yeah. You know, this was a date that was picked for him and 23 years. And I had a hard time grasping it.
Yeah.
I really, really did.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yes. So, yeah. But it was horrible.
Right. So you felt like you sat there like a year, you said.
I did. I cried every day. Every day I cried.
Yeah.
And posting did help me.
Uh-huh.
Like, it really helped me. But at the same time, I wasn't going anywhere. Like, yeah, it was helping, but it wasn't helping. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And I see that. I mean, I used to be much more active on Facebook and some of those different groups earlier on.
Yes.
And now I still post all this stuff on Facebook, right? So I go, video clips go on there and every week's podcast goes on there, but I tend to not be as involved in some of the groups because it can, sometimes you can feel a little stuck in them.
Yes. Right? You feel other people's grief and you know exactly how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And it makes you sad.
Yeah.
Like you kind of regress back.
Right.
And it's like, oh my gosh, I remember feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel so sorry for these people. You know, I just wonder how good that was for me emotionally and mentally to be in these groups.
Right. And it's sort of a little ironic that we say this because we're on a podcast where we go through new stories every week. And it is sad. It is sad. And I certainly have people saying, how do you talk to all these sad people all the time? But I feel like our goal on the podcast is always to help people and give them a little hope and help and healing. Right. So mm-hmm.
Right.
When you tell the story with the goal of helping someone in their grief, it's
right.
different than just telling a sad story of how I'm sitting in, you know, this grief and
right.
not moving. Right.
Yes. And that's my goal. It's like, because the 2-year anniversary is approaching and they say your first year is bad because you're numb.
Yeah.
And like, you just are like you're in the zombie state.
Mm-hmm.
You're like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
go through all the motions and you get up every morning and you function.
Yeah.
But there's no feeling there. It's like, mm-hmm. you're just there. You're just a human being sitting here going through your motions of everyday life without your child. And then everybody's like, your second year is worse. And I was like, no, it can't be.
You
know what? They were so right.
I did.
So right. And my second year was really, really bad because not only did I lose Blake, I also lost my sister 12/12 of 22 as well.
Oh.
And then I had to put my 14-year-old lab down.
Yeah.
And it was just like boom, boom, boom. And then in January 11th of 23, I asked my husband to leave. So I got hit from every angle of my life.
Yeah, you sure did.
And I was like, I can't do this. You know, I just can't do this. And the second year is really weird. Now, I don't know with you and Andy, like your first year, everybody's there for you.
That's the thing. Yeah.
And then your second year, it's like it holds.
Yeah.
And I'm not upset with people because, you know, it's like everybody has their lives. Everybody, you know, has things going on. And I'm not upset about that. But it's like, boy, that second year, I could have used them like I did the first year.
Uh-huh. And use them more.
Yeah.
Because now the numbness is gone.
Oh, the reality sets in.
And so that pain is actually more intense. And
everyone
assumes that you're kind of okay.
And you're not okay.
Because you've made it through that first year.
Yeah.
And you're not at all okay. You're actually worse than you were.
Oh, you're not at all. Yes.
And so much of it is the fact that you don't have the support system there anymore.
That you have. No. And I miss that. But I have two friends that recently lost their sons. And I vowed that I am not, that second year, I'm going to keep in touch with them because they're going to need me. They will need me.
Right.
And so I've already vowed, I said, you know, the second year is the worst and I will be here for you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So, and I will.
I love that.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes. So my second year was just devastating to me.
Yeah.
It was hard. I just didn't think I was going to make it. I was in a really, really dark place. A really dark place. And it scared me, but I wasn't going to do anything to myself. It's just, I was getting hit at all angles and I'm like, I'm just going to give up. Like, you know, if, you know, they take my home, they take my home. If they, you know, just, I was just hit everywhere. And so I went, like I said, I spiraled down and I stayed there. I stayed in that spot. And it wasn't good for me at all.
But it's so funny because sometimes you do because you know that spot.
Yes.
And it seems weird that you sit in the darkness, but it starts to feel comfortable.
It really
does.
Perfect. Yes.
And getting and going out of the darkness feels scary. And even though the darkness is really bad, it's what you know.
It's what exactly. And it it's kind of a comfort because you're in this spot and you feel this way and you know that you feel this way and it's not comfortable. I don't know the word I want to use for it.
Yeah.
It's my new normal, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just kind of regressed and stayed there. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did.
And
I did.
And going outside of your comfort zone, really, truly, is scary. It's scary. The idea of like, I really should get up and start working on this grief and working on healing. Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're so used to it and you're stuck in it that you're afraid of what could be.
Yeah.
Like forgetting about your child, forgetting about what happened, like not remembering, you know, certain memories and stuff. It is. It's a very scary place to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want people to know that this is all normal. Everything that you feel is normal. You feel like you're crazy.
Yeah.
You feel like you're going crazy.
Right.
But this is actually normal. It's a normal thing. And you're not crazy.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to bring up the point of that when you are sitting in the darkness and you're just sort of comfortable there, and I know that isn't quite the right word, but it's the closest word I can come to.
Yeah,
that's normal. It is normal to do that.
Yes,
because it's easier than the alternative.
So much easier. Yes, so much easier, and it's because you're comfortable with that feeling. You don't want to move forward because if you move forward, you might forget.
Yes.
But you never forget. You never forget.
You never will. And it's silly to think you might, but that is the fear. That is the fear.
Yeah. It was my fear that I wasn't going to remember Blake. People weren't going to remember Blake. Uh-huh. And I would be the only one.
Yeah. I remember talking to my therapist and having her have to remind me again and again, it is not your grief and your sorrow that is keeping Andy close to you. It is your love that is keeping Andy close to you.
Wow.
So it is okay to let some of those really dark feelings go because that's not what's keeping you together.
You know, that's perfect.
It is perfect because that is what it feels like. It feels like I need to be miserable every second of every day because that's what's keeping him close to me.
Well,
and it turns out that's not it at all.
Nope, it sure isn't. Wow, that your therapist like hit the
right
nail on the head.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so perfect. Mine was I had to deal with my trauma before I could even deal with my grief.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me because the things that I saw, the things that they were doing, it'll never leave my head. I don't think
I know
it will ever leave me. Yeah. And it was hard to see them doing stuff like that to your child, knowing, you know, finally realizing at the first hospital that they had to divert to what was really going on.
Yeah.
And then me being aware of it and being like, I should have did this. I should have asked more questions. I should have did this, you know.
Yeah.
And then that starts. Mm-hmm. That starts. Mm-hmm. So my second year was rough till, like I said, things changed.
Yes. So I need you to talk about that. I need you to talk about what happened to change things because it was pretty profound.
Yes, it was. I think it was meant to happen because it snapped me out of that darkness that I was in. In October, when Blake passed away, his boss, he had a job that he loved and he worked in a bakery and it was just, he loved it there. He loved the team. He loved everything. Well, when he passed away, I needed a job.
Yeah.
And his boss offered me a job in his place.
I love that.
So, oh my gosh. To feel his presence every day when I walk through that door was amazing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working there. I'm a diabetic. I finally got my A1C under control. I was on Trulicity and doing okay. And then October hit of what year is this? 2024.
2024, yeah. 2022.
In October.
Or 2023, yeah.
I started at 23. Yeah, I was feeling really weird. I hadn't been to my endocrinologist because I was grieving so bad. I didn't want to go anywhere. I wanted to stay home. I wanted to shut myself off from the world. Mm-hmm. And I just told her, can you please, you know, prescribe my medicine. I'm going to get in. This is what happened. I can't be around people. I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to like go out. And she said, I will do it, but you're going to have to come in and see me. Well, October came, November was really bad. I was feeling like when I would walk, I kind of felt like I was walking on air. I would forget things. It was really bizarre. And then December came and I was feeling really bad. Like I felt faint. I felt like I couldn't hold my balance and I was at work and they were saying my voice was slurred, but we were all sick and I went to the doctor and got medication. Everybody's thinking, well, maybe your medication's not mixing right. And I said, well, maybe not, but I just was feeling really awful while on. I'm a creature of habit. When I became diabetic, I told my boss, I said, I'm diabetic. Logan, who is Blake's best friend, she's got a house key. If I ever don't show up, mm-hmm. you can have her come check on me because she's got a key. So January 8th comes. It's not even a work day. But I had been texting with my boss that weekend and she hadn't heard from me after Saturday. I was hallucinating. I thought like my water line broke. And that there was water all over the floor. And I said, I'm not coming in because there's water all over my floor. And I got towels everywhere and all that. And then that's all she heard from me. So Monday is our day off. She called up Logan and said, you know what? I haven't heard from Sandy. Can you go check on her? And she did. She found me unconscious. I was in a coma. I didn't know this. I was in a coma. And she called 911 and they said, had it wasn't like if she wouldn't have come at that particular time, they would have found me dead in my home. Wow. My respiratory was 34. My sugar was 1500. Mm-hmm. And all my organs were shutting down. Yeah. So they rushed me to the hospital. They vented me right away and then took me to CAT. I don't remember any of this because like they're asking me, do you remember? They told my family I wasn't going to make it and to prepare. To prepare. So I'm on the vent and all I can remember is like they had my hands tied and I was trying to move my hands and I was like fighting it and they were like, you know, Sandy, you're at Ohio Health, you're in intensive care, you're on a vent, you're very sick, da da da. You have to stop fighting because we have to have you, you know, in restraints so you don't pull out the vent. Well, they must have given me something to sedate me because I wouldn't stop. And then all I knew is that I was getting taken off the vent 48 hours after I was there. And palliative care was coming in that day that they weaned me off the vent to talk to my family about, you know, everything that was going on and keeping me comfortable and all of that. Yeah, it was bizarre. They took me off the vent and then everybody's telling me what happened. And it was like, I don't know. It was, I almost died.
Yeah.
It made me think about Blake's death, about the way that I was. And I was like, not healed, but I actually went, like skipped a bunch of layers of grief. And I'm like, I have a purpose. I'm going to bring organ and tissue awareness. You know, in Blake's honor, I am going to, you know, tell people what happened to me and know that, you know, when it's not your time to go, God isn't going to take you.
Yeah.
And I was a prime example of that. And the doctors just shook their heads when they were coming in saying, do you realize you're a miracle? Yeah. You are a miracle. And people were coming in from like the other floors, like coming to see this miracle patient. You know, I was kind of on display and I was like, wow. This is really something.
Right. Because they think, they certainly thought you were not going to make it. You should not have survived. With Mm-mm. what you went through, with what your organs had gone through, it should have been the end for you.
Yes, it should have been the end for me. And it was not. And that opened up my eyes to a whole new thing. My grieving was different. It was, how can I honor Blake?
Yeah.
I want to talk about Blake. And that's when I reached out to you, because I never thought I'd be able to do this. Like, I don't think that.
No. No, and honestly, I never thought you would do it either, to be quite honest. I really did not.
No, I was like, I will never be able to do what you did. I will never be able to do this. I will never be able to talk about Blake like this, because it's too devastating. And it was just like I became this new person. And I realized that I do have a purpose, and I need to honor Blake's life when he was alive.
Right. Because your life right now is just a gift. This is all an extra gift.
A gift. It is. Right? I am so thankful. I am so thankful. I felt like I got hit by a Mack truck.
Right.
But I was so grateful to be here and to talk to everybody. And it was like, you know, everybody was preparing for the worst. And like my niece, you know, she went through this with her mom, my sister. And she was like becoming my POA and everything. She was just doing it all, getting everything under control, because nobody would talk to her. So she was getting things in order for me, thinking I wasn't going to make it. And then here I am.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, they all thought, well, she'll be with Blake. I mean, you, when I think about your initial grief journey, I'm sure you would have thought like, okay, hey, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I know.
Yeah.
My blood sugar goes up through the roof and now I can be with Blake. Okay, cool.
Yes. Yes. And that's what I thought when I woke up. I could have been with Blake, but I'm not.
But you're
it
not.
Obviously is at my time.
Exactly.
So I need to refocus. Yes. I need to start living again for one.
Uh-huh.
I need to honor my child for two. And I just need to get through these other layers of grief so that I can continue to live my life the way that I meant to do it and the way that Blake would want me to do it.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because I so envision there being some sort of conversation between God and Blake.
There had to have been.
As you are there.
Yes.
As you are there.
There had to have been.
Dying. And whether Blake was like, hey, God, you know, no.
Yeah.
It's not time. Mom doesn't need to come yet.
Yeah.
I'm cool. I'm fine. Let's let mom stay. Or whether it was God saying to Blake, hey, I know it looks like your mom's going to be here really soon, but actually that's not really the plan for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time to, we need to fix her and she's got more work to do. She's got more things to do. So I don't know who was saying what to who, but I feel like there was a conversation.
There was a conversation. Definitely there was.
There was a conversation and they both settled on the fact that it just wasn't time yet.
Nope, it wasn't time yet. And so it opened up my eyes and I thought, okay, you know, I know how sick I was. And in that deep place that I was, it is time to like pull up my big girl panties and just get on with honoring my child. And so that is what I've been doing.
Uh-huh.
That is exactly what I've been doing. Yeah. And I don't post a lot about him on Facebook now. Coming on here, I was having a tad bit of anxiety because I was like, I was going to be bringing up trauma that I remember that I don't want to remember, but I always will. And I didn't know how I was going to feel. And everybody was like, Sandy, you're going to do fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to. And yeah, I teared up a couple of times and, you know, but that's normal too.
Of course it is. You can't talk about those painful moments and not tear up. That's normal.
No, because I'll always miss him. I'll always love him. But one thing for sure is I am going to make him proud of me while I'm still here.
Yeah.
So
it's really would be funny to go back. Which I sort of did, but to go back almost to read to you your messages to me then and now. Because you honestly didn't even sound like the same person.
Oh, I'm not the same person, you know? I was very depressed and I was just so down when I contacted you. And then all of a sudden it was like, this happened to me. And you know what? It opened up my eyes, you know, and yes, I miss Blake. I will always miss Blake. I will always love Blake, but it is time to start honoring him in the way that he deserves to be honored and remembered.
Right, right. Because as you were sitting in the darkness, you weren't really able to honor his life.
No, no. I could not do that because I was in such a dark place.
You were only focusing on his death at that point in time.
Yes. And not at his life and what he did on this earth and how people, you know, were so grateful to know him. Mm-hmm. You know, his friends helped me through a lot. They go with me on his birthday. We have this place that we go. We'd always take Blake. It was Wakano's. And it was a Japanese steakhouse. He loved it. The last year that I was able to take him, we all sit at that same table and we honor his life. And as hard as it was to do that, I really wasn't honoring his life because I was so like, Blake's not here. I'm doing this with his friends, but he's not here. And I miss him. How can I do this? You know, how am I doing this?
Yeah.
I just put on a mask. I put on a mask and enjoyed his friends and they would leave and I'd go right back.
Yeah.
Right back to that dark place.
Yeah.
Right back.
That's interesting that you use that term because that's, I think, what so many of us do.
Yes.
So many of us just wear a mask and a different mask for different people.
Yes. Yes. You know, people say, how are you? I hate that. Don't ask me how I am. Just hug me and don't say one word. Don't say
right,
a word.
Because how do you even answer that question, really?
How are you doing? I lost my child. You know, I miss him terribly. Yeah. How do you answer that?
Yeah.
You don't.
You don't.
You don't. You don't.
It's tough.
And it's okay not to. It's okay not to. But you know what? There comes a point in time when it's like, you know, this is what I want. That's what I need from you. I need just a hug. Don't ask me how I'm doing because I don't know how I'm going to do the rest of my life, you know, without Blake.
Yeah.
But if you hug me, you let me know that you care.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I need. And that's what I do with my other two friends. I send them a yellow heart because that was Blake's favorite color, a prayer, and another yellow heart. And I don't ask them how they're doing because I know how they're doing.
Right.
I know how they're doing. So I don't need to ask them that. I just want them to know that I'm thinking about them.
Right. And that's so important. And it's so funny because I talk to you now and you seem like so together. And I know my listeners are going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be like that. That one was so together. But you know what? You're still going to have your hard days too.
Oh, of course.
And when this 2-year anniversary comes up, is that going to be hard? Yes.
Yes.
Of course it is.
Yes.
And you're not going to feel probably this strong then. But then the next day you're going to wake up and maybe you will again. And so that's the thing. Every day can be different. And don't feel like you have to be like amazingly strong every day. Because you don't.
Yes.
And you don't have to be strong any day. But if you are strong some days, great.
Great. You know, the first laugh, I can remember the first smile I gave and the first laugh, I almost felt guilty.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I'm laughing and my son is gone. You know, I'm smiling and Blake is gone.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, I know Blake wouldn't want me to be that way. And I think he's proud of me. I think he's proud of what I have done.
I know he is. I know he is.
Since a near-death experience for myself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's going to take that for everybody. Some people are going to grieve, you know, for a long period of time and stay in that place.
Yeah.
And you know what? If it's making you sick, you need to, like, look at other avenues. Like, look at things differently. Like, do things in honor of your child. Like I did, I adopted, you know, a shelter dog in Blake's name. And I wrote a letter to the person whoever would adopt her. And I explained why I did it. And I did it for our Humane Society because Blake loved animals as much as I loved animals. We fostered and we kept. And we fostered and we rescued and we kept. And my, you know, Blake's like, when is this all going to end? You know, because he had to take out all the dogs and everything. But yeah, I did things in his honor that I thought that he would like me to do. And I will continue to do it. I will find different ways to do it now and better.
Yeah.
And better.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. Just keeping his memory alive.
Mm-hmm. Keeping his memory alive. And that is my goal. And that is why, you know, doing this podcast is so important, because if I can be in those dark places like I was and never think I was going to get out, you will. You will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't think you're going to, but you will. And I'm a prime example of it. You're a prime example of it.
Yep.
You know, Donna and Jeff are prime examples of it. Mm-hmm. It happens. Yep. Not right away.
No.
Not right away.
It certainly can. It certainly can.
It certainly, yes, it can.
And that's what we're trying to do here, right? If we were trying to get you to think, you know what? If Sandy can do it, if Marcy can do it, if Donna and Jeff can do it, maybe I can too.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes. Yeah.
And if it just gives you a hope of a maybe, that's all.
The hope.
Because I remember thinking and saying to Eric, which would get him so upset, is I would use absolutes. I will never, you know, I will never be happy again. I will never do this again. I will never. And what I want to do is to take those thoughts away and turn those thoughts into maybe.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, it is a normal, this is a normal thing that we all went through. I went through it. You went through it. You know, Jeff and Donna went through it. My girlfriends are going through it. But there's always hope. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I hate to say it that way, but for me, that's what it was. It was a light that hit, that went off in my head.
Yeah.
And like Sandy.
Yeah.
Do this for Blake. You know, he would be so proud of you. Mm-hmm. And it comes. It comes in the time that it's supposed to come. You can't rush it.
No.
You can't rush it.
You can't.
You can't. And that's what people have to remember. You cannot force this to happen. It happens when you are ready.
And you can't force it on other people.
Mm-mm. No.
You can't force it on other people. You have to come to it on your own, too.
Exactly. Exactly. And it will come. It will come, even though you don't think it will.
So you mentioned before we started recording that you wanted to talk about Blake's motto.
Yes.
At the end, but you didn't say what it was. So I've been looking forward to this. So what is Blake's motto and what does that doing now?
Yes. Blake's motto. This is so him. And like when I go to like Lifeline of Ohio, they have let me go. We go to remember, you know, all of our loved ones and everything. I always speak about Blake because I love to talk about Blake. Mm-hmm. And at the end of everything that Lifeline has, I read this motto because it was so Blake. It tells who Blake was as a person, what he was trying to achieve, and it couldn't be any more perfect for him. So I'll read it to you. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he got it. I think he got it from what are those called? I can't think of the word. They're like characters. It's like a cartoon, but it's not. It starts with an A.
Anime?
Yes. Okay. I think that is from that. But this is it. To be strong enough so no one has to worry about me. To have the strength to be someone's legs and arms. To tend to the wounded and to heal the broken. To have the unbreakable will and the unwavering resolve. That is why this is what I aspire to be. I want to reach the top and share it with everyone else. Oh, that was Blake.
That is beautiful.
It was Blake. And I love it when I was writing it down, because I should have it memorized as many times as I've read it, but it gets to me every time.
Yeah.
It gets to me every time.
I love that, being the arms and legs of other people, that part.
And Blake was. Mm-hmm. Blake you know, suffered from depression, and he always helped everybody else. I think helping other people helped him cope with that.
And now you're doing that. And now yes. You're doing that very thing.
Yes, I am. And, you know, it's on back. Blake wanted to be cremated, so I honored his wishes, but it's on the back of his urn.
Yeah.
It's on the back of his urn. And so to look at that all the time, it's like, Blake, you couldn't have picked anything more appropriate for your life because this is what you did.
Yeah.
This is what you did.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today, Sandy. Loved it.
Mercy, thank you so much
for
letting me talk about Blake and sharing him with the podcast world, because it's what I've wanted to do. It was earlier than I thought when I said I would never do it. And it has brought me joy, as well as just remembering, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you found this helpful and would like to support the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and comment. To help financially, you can type Andy's Mom, one word, to the number 53555. This provides a link to GiveButter, which allows donations through PayPal, Venmo, Apple Pay, or credit cards. GiveButter will provide a receipt of your tax-deductible donation. Or you can visit the donation page at andysmom.com/donate. Always Andy's Mom is a registered 501c3 and can receive donations through Thrivent Financial and Benevity. Marcy loves hearing from listeners. Please feel free to reach out to her via email at marcy@andysmom.com or on the Instagram or Facebook Always Andy's Mom accounts. Sign up for the email list to get weekly episode links as well as pictures of Marcy's guests and their children. Together, let's work to inspire hope one day at a time.